Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The 2011 Oscar nominations are announced. A Day of Revolt shuts down the city of Cairo. And here in Oregon, we have a fire at the cheese factory.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado. I said without further ado. Steel yourselves for Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, January 25th, 2011. A fire at the Tillamook Cheese Factory.
Not the cheese factory!
Caused evacuations this morning, but fortunately there was no serious damage. Officials say the fire broke out in the dining room of the visitor center in the early morning hours.
Not the dining room at the visitor center!
What about the Kurds? Who's thinking of the Kurds?
This is where my wit fails me, because my immediate reaction was to say Saddam Hussein, but really not so much anymore.
No, not really.
less than you might imagine.
The evacuation affected the entire cheese factory and was lifted after about an hour.
Not the entire cheese factory?
Can you see how, in theory, though, if he were still alive and not dead, me saying Saddam Hussein would have been funny?
That would have been funny. I know. I was trying to think of a Kurds joke, too, but honestly, I think of the Kurds so rarely. The actual curds, not the cheese curds.
You know, thanks to the curds.
I think of cheese curds a lot.
Very rarely.
Who?
Saddam Hussein. Yeah! Yeah!
There you go.
He's back, baby.
Oh, you brought that. Brought that one right down the runway.
It's where I live.
Although the visitor center will be closed today for a fire investigation, the cheese factory is back up and running. No injuries were reported during the fire, and it's not clear what caused it. Heidi Laquette, a spokeswoman with the cheese factory, says it's too early to assess how much damage was caused by the fire. The Tillamook Cheese Factory is considered a major tourist attraction in Oregon, which, if you're not from here, I think that tells you a lot about Oregon. The factory on Highway 101 makes cheese 365 days per year, and thousands of visitors descend on the facility every week for tours, cheese tasting, and ice cream.
Hey, who burned my cheese? This joke, copyright 2003. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. If you are listening, just email and tell us why. It is
Tuesday, January 25th.
Sorry, my tea water is not hot enough to make tea, and it's making me sad.
It seems like you're flummoxed by the whole thing.
Well, there's a special button on the microwave that just says beverage, and it's supposed to automatically make it the right heat.
Don't get me started on the microwave.
And for some reason, this time it didn't, and now it's just sort of warm, and my tea is sad.
Let me just tell you this. That microwave is not so much a kitchen appliance as it is an endless portal to tears. I mean, it's just, it just takes you down a hallway of despair into a corridor of frustration into an alley of anger.
It sounds like you've had some issues with the kitchen microwave.
And yet I found my way back here in time for the show. Is there no end to what this man can do? It is Tuesday, January 25th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. It's Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com or on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. mobile.cascadia.fm. Later on this hour, you got your entertainment news coming up. Also, Science on the March. This is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The search for a man accused of shooting and wounding a Lincoln City police officer is now in its second day after a manhunt failed to turn up any sign of 43-year-old David Durham. Oregon State Police troopers say Durham shot Officer Stephen Dodds multiple times after being pulled over for speeding on Highway 101. Dodds is now in critical condition at a Portland hospital. A Lincoln City family said the shooting happened right in front of their house. Daryl Richardson, who helped the wounded officer, said he was in pain and hurting, so we just stayed with him and tried to encourage him. I'm assuming they tried to encourage him to get better.
Hey, let me ask you this about Highway 101.
Okay.
Is Highway 101, is that the same highway that goes along the Pacific Ocean in California?
It is indeed.
You know, we really get screwed.
They change it to, I think it's Highway 1 in some places and 101 in others.
We just get the fuzzy end of that lollipop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you look at Highway 101 or whatever they call it, as it gets through this part of the country, and then you look at it in, I don't know, California, it's like two different sections of road altogether. It doesn't even really seem like it ought to have the same name.
Yeah, the section where it goes through Carmel and Monterey in California is just stunningly beautiful. It is amazingly beautiful. Here in Oregon, it basically goes through a bunch of small towns trying to sell you fudge.
Just a bunch of Indians clutching turquoise jewelry.
Yeah, every 5 feet, there's like a saw blade with something painted on it or a big sign that says fudge. That's basically all we get.
You want some chainsaw art? Perhaps dignified bear standing in foyer of home.
Oregon.
Yeah. This is all true.
Well, Durham is believed to have his dog with him, and this makes me sad. So the guy that the manhunt is looking for, he has a salt and pepper-colored blue heeler Australian cattle dog named Huckleberry.
Well, can we all just...
This isn't Huckleberry's fault, by the way. So no harm should come to Huckleberry.
Well, I don't know. That's what they said about that dog next door to the Son of Sam. Yeah, but...
Well, that's true. You know. That's true. Maybe Huckleberry's making him do this.
Seriously. You know, sometimes a dog just goes bad, Don.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to find out...
Now he's like, instead of Son of Sam, he's like friend of Huckleberry, which doesn't really trip off the tongue.
By the way, we're not saying that that's the case. I mean, we don't know for certain that Huckleberry is a bad dog. I'm sure
no.
He's a good dog.
He's probably a very good dog.
Who's a good dog?
He has no idea
Huckleberry,
what's going on.
If you can hear me right now, Huckleberry, if you are listening, go for the carotid artery. It can be compressed with a bare minimum of pressure.
If no one is blaming you, Huckleberry, just find the local authorities and turn the guy in. I know you're loyal. But really, it'll be better for everyone.
Sometimes snitching is okay, Huckleberry. You know, if you tell a proper adult about these things.
And if you turn him in, we'll give you a cookie.
Can't you just... Isn't this one of those things, too, where you just... Like, you immediately... Like, whatever this guy's backstory is, whatever it is that may have brought him to this strange and unfortunate and tragic and criminal crossroads in his life, you immediately just don't care because you're more concerned about the dog.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally where
I
am. Like, I skip to the bottom of that spreadsheet instantly.
And I'm also more willing to, like, cut him some slack now because, I mean, he's got a dog named Huckleberry.
Yeah.
He can't be all bad.
No, but see, that's not true because there's a lot of people who have dogs who are completely all bad. Michael Vick, for example.
Well, yeah, that's true. It just seems like if you're going to name your dog Huckleberry, there must be something good about you.
Can I just tell you, I saw... It's one of those... Okay, we gotta make a little a pact, a vow, a solemn promise between ourselves not to get completely off the point. Because I can already sense it's one of those days where I'm running a little bit late, your tea doesn't quite function, the printer is screwing us both, and no one can use the microwave. And so we got to make sure that we don't let it defocus us.
All right.
We have to stay singular of mind and purpose.
We will not be defocused.
I am just going to say that just one final observation. This is, I did see... I don't even want to. I don't want to say it's one of the best Twitter postings I've ever seen, because I don't even know how you quantify that. But I saw something on Twitter last night that actually, I actually sort of recoiled a little bit from the screen, and I went, "Oh!" And I actually had that reaction. I actually sort of out loud did a sort of combination, like impressed and shocked and sort of darkly amused, but then also kind of horrified all at once. And that's from 140 characters. It was like 85 characters. And it was a guy. He put up a Twitter post. I don't know how long ago this was, but it had been retweeted by somebody. And yes, I just said retweeted. But he was a resident of the city of brotherly love of Philadelphia. And he actually said, the Twitter posting said, "Attention kids in Philadelphia, remember, Michael Vick drowned a dog just like yours."
Oh, wow.
And I actually have no idea how I feel about that. I read that and it was just one of those perfectly crafted, like stunningly well put together sentences.
Yeah.
And you went, oh, and even now it just fills me with the strangest mix of emotions. I honestly don't know how I don't know if I'm even glad that I saw it, but it was really, really well done. So
yeah, it's kind of horrible, but I also admire it.
Yeah. Well, and
I admire someone for actually just saying that.
And I like anybody, whatever anybody thinks about that, and really it seems like there's only one way you can think about it, but.
And yet.
But I admire people who are able to boil everything down to one simple sort of razor sharp sentence. So well done, anonymous Twitterer. Hmm. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
A Seattle police officer's opinion piece in a union newspaper is creating controversy between the union and the city council. Officer Steve Pomper recently wrote a column in the police guild's newspaper, The Guardian, titled, "Just Shut Up and Be a Good Little Socialist." Pomper accused the city of forcing socialist policies on the police department. He criticized the city's race and social justice initiative, including officers being required to take classes on racial profiling.
Somebody doesn't know what socialism means.
He wrote, "Social justice is a socialist scheme that judges people not as individuals, but by their race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status." He went on to write, "A liberal after my money and taxes may be my opponent, but a socialist attacking the Constitution and my liberty is my enemy." Yes, you're clutching your forehead in pain now.
Okay.
I can tell. City Council member Tim Burgess is most concerned with Officer Pomper's use of the word enemy. He said, "When we characterize or label people as the enemy, that is not productive." "I don't think the article reflects the view of our police department. It certainly doesn't reflect my views," he said. Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn is also concerned that in the wake of accusations of excessive force against minorities, Pomper's column could add to public concerns.
Is this going to be followed by the inevitable, "I deeply regret any offense that my column may have caused. In no way did I mean to slight any members of the community. I, of course, embrace my fellow man with tolerance and understanding."
Yes, something like that.
Okay. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news. Also, Science on the March. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program airs just one short hour from now at rickemersonshow.com. It is rickemersonshow.com. Coming up today, we'll talk to our good friend Eric D. Snyder, who's live at the Sundance Film Festival. We'll also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority and the Top 5. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
An Illinois appellate court ruled in a 2-1 decision on Monday that Rahm Emanuel does not meet the requirements to run for mayor of Chicago. There is an update on this that I was looking for. But in the meantime, Chicago Sun-Times political reporter Avdin Palash said that 4 years ago, in a case similar to this, election officials found that they had to tell voters someone whose name was on the ballot for an alderman position was ineligible. And that could possibly happen again.
Is this the, these are sound bites here?
Yes.
Is this ROM 1?
It is indeed.
Incidentally, and this is just a little behind the curtain, breaking the fourth wall, in the Dropbox, there are actually two news documents you'll see there. There's 0125A, 0125B.
Okay.
So there you go. This is somebody talking about Rahm Emanuel.
We had cases of people going to the polling place, and they get handed a sheet saying, "Even though this candidate's name is on the ballot, don't vote for him because they've been ruled ineligible." And we could have that situation here with Rahm Emanuel, where maybe his name's on the ballot, but the Supreme Court has ruled just before Election Day that he's not eligible, so the voters are told, "Don't waste your time voting for Rahm Emanuel. He's been ruled off the ballot."
I wonder if it comes as some sort of like a culture shock if you're in Chicago and you get told you can't do something in an election. You know, like if somebody says, "I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to do that this election cycle," It's against the law. I wonder if their mouth even has, if they even have the muscles to form those words in Chicago, or if it's just like if they have to get somebody to guide them through it phonetically, like Klaus Meine.
Or they just all snicker after they say it, and everyone just accepts that.
Violating election law.
Polish said Emanuel's attorneys would be filing an appeal to this ruling since voting in this primary election is approaching quickly.
The election is February 22nd, but early voting is scheduled to begin Monday.
And it just broke, actually, on CNN that the Illinois Supreme Court will take up a ruling that would keep Rahm Emanuel off the mayoral ballot. And the court has agreed to a motion for an expedited ruling. There's not going to be any oral arguments in the case. They're going to use briefs already filed.
And that's the Chicago way.
That's right.
You're listening to Legion of News.
Horrible.
Here at what?
That was terrible. You didn't sound like Sean Connery at all.
No, it's all about... See, here's the thing. But nobody really would have thought about it. They wouldn't have dwelled on it if you hadn't pointed it out. Why do you have to underscore my failings? Wait, we're getting defocused again, aren't we?
Yeah, well, a little bit.
Hey, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is 12:16 on Tuesday, January 25th, 2011. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Police say a trail of children's confessions led them to a smoke shop in Oregon City where workers have been routinely selling tobacco to underage kids.
Normally, they're following a trail of children's tears, so it's good to see that we're actually, you know, this is a moderate improvement.
We are improving.
Relatively speaking, it's a step forward.
Yes. A couple of years ago in Oregon City, it would have been a trail of children's underpants.
Wow.
Oregon City investigators say it all started with a mother who said she caught her teenage son with tobacco that he claimed he bought at Cigarettes Cheaper in the 19,000 block of Beaver Creek Road.
That place doesn't sell tobacco. They only sell tobacco.
Late last year, police performed a sting operation at the store using an underage decoy. Police say the clerk sold the smokes to the decoy, and officers then cited Tri-Trin for endangering the welfare of a minor. Since the beginning of the year, several other underage teens have come forward to say they've bought cigarettes at the store. One student said he did it more than 30 times. Police say a student who also told investigators he was able to buy alcohol at the store. Officers are now asking the city to review the store's business license.
Well, look, I'm not saying you ought to be selling, you know, poison to children. You save that for adults. But, because if you're selling toxic substances to kids, it's just less for the rest of us. But that notwithstanding, and I say this with the greatest amount of respect, what kind of snitch-ass student buys cigarettes 30 times and then thinks, maybe I should tell a grown-up about this? What is up with that?
I don't know. So somebody that's been, put into a room with a cop and told that he'll, get kicked out of school if he doesn't help or something.
Is this that he was, buying cigarettes for some girlfriend that would put out, and it's, now that she's dumped him, I'm just speculating.
That might be.
He didn't have any reason to go to the store, and so he's taking out his frustration on a man who's trying to make a living by peddling, toxic smoke to children.
Yeah. Well, Tri-Trin wrote to the police department and said he was sorry for allowing minors to buy tobacco. In his letter, he wrote,
I have brought shame on whole family.
The reason is because I am new at this, and sometime I am too focusing on other things and neglect the ID checking.
Oh, my God. I was speaking in a stereotypically English is my second language sort of phraseology.
Yes,
there just as a gag. I didn't know it was an accurate representation of his grasp of syntax.
There you are.
Can you read that one more time? I wish I had some. Hold on a second. I think I set aside some stereotypically Asian music.
Are you seriously? Okay.
No, I can't find it.
All right. The reason is because I am new at this, and sometime that's not Asian at all. The reason is because I am new at this, and sometime I am too focusing on other things and neglect the ID checking. I just made Tri-Trin French.
All right.
Okay. That made me happy. Police arrested a suspect in an arsonist for hire thing in Titusville, which...
An arsonist for hire thing in Titusville.
An arsonist for hire plot what I should have said.
The funny part about that is that's exactly how the Titusville Tribune describes it, probably. Some sort of a thing happened.
It is in Florida, so,
Okay.
Police suspect an arsonist for hire plot in Titusville, Florida, after they said he made a critical mistake. He left the tip of his finger at the scene of the crime.
Yep.
Meanwhile, detectives are seeking the public's help in finding the man they say was trying to pull off an insurance scam by burning down his house. Police were called to the fire at a home in North Dixie Avenue about 11:15 a.m. on Saturday. While they were investigating, police said they discovered evidence of accelerants, leading them to determine the fire was likely an arson. Then, while sifting through the evidence, the officers found a piece of a latex glove with the tip of a finger inside. They said they found their suspect at a local hospital. They matched the tip to 24-year-old Ismael Ortiz, and he quickly confessed.
Now, maybe I've missed this. Does it say how it became severed?
Yes. He set the fire. He was trying to flee the house quickly after setting the fire, and he slammed his finger in the door.
Okay, and it severed it?
It cut the tip of his finger off.
What kind of door are we talking about here? Is it a metal door? Is it some sort of a...
It might have been.
Is it like one of those huge, like, Gates of Mordor type of things? Because I got to tell you, I slammed my finger, I mean, really, really, very, very hard, the tip of my finger in a door when I was, like, maybe 18 or so. And it's, I mean, and it was, I mean, it was a heavy door, caught it just in the edge. I mean, really, if ever I was going to sever the tip of my finger in a door, that would have been the time, and it didn't. So it makes you wonder if there's, you know, more to the story, or maybe...
Maybe it was one of those metal security doors or something.
Maybe. Or maybe he just has some sort of a defective finger. Maybe he's just made up of twine and Kleenex.
Maybe he's a leper.
That seems unlikely. Seems like he would have left more things behind. But, you know.
Yes. Ortiz told detectives he was hired by a resident of the home, Sammy Davis.
Really?
Yes. Samuel Davis goes by Sammy.
Okay.
Investigators said Davis hired Ortiz to burn down the house so he could collect on the renter's insurance policy.
I'm sorry. Here's the funny thing about... I was going to say here's the funny thing about me, but it's not really that. It's here's the stupid thing about me, is that in my own head right now, as you were talking about that guy being named Sammy Davis, I wasn't going to do, like, the impression, but it's like in my own head I heard some alternate version morning DJ, iteration of me doing a bad Sammy Davis Jr. thing as that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of heard, like, a parallel world thing where I was hosting, like, the Mary, Gary, and Larry show.
You don't have some kind of, like, a pipe organ version of the Candyman that
No.
you could play for that?
No, I don't, sadly.
President Obama delivers his State of
President
the
Union. President who?
Obama.
Which Obama is this? Is this Zeke Obama?
No. Strangely enough, this would be President Barack Obama.
This isn't Fess Parker Obama.
No.
Okay.
No. Or Samuel Sammy Obama. This is Barack Obama.
Okay.
Mr. Obama, if you're nasty. He delivers his State of the Union address tonight. House Speaker John Bonner says Obama's speech needs to reflect two priorities, creating jobs and cutting spending.
Here's the thing is, I think you are actually also mispronouncing it. Just like people say Boner, I think it is Boehner.
I thought it was Bonner.
I don't really know the answer, but I think it's Boehner. But then again, you know, it's like nobody even knows if it's Cheney or Cheney. You know, it's like nobody...
I'd like to say Boner, but...
You don't want to do that, because then you're the Stephanie Miller show.
Yeah.
You don't know. All right. The American people... I'm sorry, is this State 01?
The State 01?
The American people know that we can't continue to borrow and spend our way to prosperity.
Oh, can't we?
They understand that we've got to tighten the belt. And I'm hopeful that the president is listening to the American people.
I don't believe a word this man says. Bonner says he's looking forward to hearing from Obama. Again, I don't believe him.
I'm hopeful that the word investment really isn't more stimulus spending and a bigger government here in Washington.
Okay.
No, okay.
That happened.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do you need a moment to center yourself?
I do.
I will take this opportunity to say that this fine broadcast is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. That is the website for that fine firm, SquiresElectric.com, or you can call them at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. And so if you are getting ready to move into a new house, if you're getting ready to remodel, if you're getting ready to expand your existing house, or maybe you just suspect that your husband isn't quite as bright as he thinks he is when it comes to fixing things that jut out of the wall downstairs and throw off showers of sparks occasionally, you know.
Like our microwave.
Exactly. You know, you might. Well, here's the thing.
Wait. I mean. Microwave doesn't do that.
But this is the perfect example. Well, see, but that's not true. Every now and again, I will microwave something that I think is microwaved, because now I don't even know. And please resist. Please, I beg of you. Everyone, resist the urge to, like, just jump on right now and start telling me about all this. We got to save some stuff, because otherwise we're never going to get anything done this hour. I don't know what's microwave safe and what's not anymore. Because I saw that whole Mythbusters thing where they were just microwaving metal by, like, the pound. And they were just like, it's fine. It's always been fine. Which just goes against everything that I've ever been told. It's like I am chromosomally incapable of putting metal in the microwave. Because you just hear that you can't do it. And then it's like this Adam Savage, he's got a handful of silverware, throws it in, he's like, look at it, nothing, no problem. So it's all very confusing. And yet, if you microwave tinfoil, just up in flames, you know? Anyway, so the point is, I don't know these things. I don't even know how to work the microwave in the kitchen. I swear, I don't mean to go back and just carp about this. But that microwave is... No one needs that many buttons on a microwave. There's no call for that. It's completely... I mean, I'm not saying like you have to go back to where the dial was. But, I mean, how about just a thing that says on? And like another one that says off. Bam. Set. Or maybe just a thing that adds a minute every time you press it. You know what I mean?
Well, that has a thing that adds 30 seconds every time you press it.
Yeah, but why? What are the other 70 buttons for?
I don't know.
No one knows. They're just there. They're just there so some guy... Because I'm getting good value for my money. Look at all these buttons. I mean, I can barely turn the thing on without maiming myself, I think. So, I mean, God forbid. But here's the thing, is that I, like Mr. Rumsfeld, I can identify a known unknown. I know the things that in which I am mentally deficient. And one of those things is electricity and trying to fix anything around the house. So not everybody is blessed with that same skill of self-awareness, though. So you got husband, girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, somebody, and it's like, and they're just getting out a pair of pliers, and they're doing that thing of like, you know, they're going to strip off the wire insulation with their teeth. Just stop. Stop them. Stop them where they stand. And you get in touch with Squires Electric and said, squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Free estimates up top. No job too small or too large. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier and save your significant other boatloads of shame. 503-252-1609. Here's Don Taylor.
A Facebook-organized Tunisia-inspired Day of Revolt gripped Egypt today as hundreds of protesters took to the streets of Cairo to protest the decades-long rule of President Hosni Mubarak, which I am probably pronouncing horribly wrong. Holding signs that read, Tunisia is the solution and down with Mubarak, anti-government activists marched in front of the Supreme Court in downtown Cairo, virtually shutting down the city as riot police looked on. While the BBC reports that protests were largely peaceful, Al Jazeera writes that a handful of demonstrators climbed on cars and threw rocks at soldiers as police responded with blasts from a water cannon and set upon crowds with batons and acrid clouds of tear gas. Like Tunisia, Egypt has a well-educated population with high levels of unemployment, but its opposition movement has been split over who should replace their leader, who has held power since 1981. Tens of thousands of people responded online to today's call to protest, which Al Jazeera says originated from a Facebook page initially set up to honor a 28-year-old man from Alexandria who activists say was tortured to death by police.
It doesn't surprise you that they even allow Facebook in places like that. I mean, I think China actually disallowed it.
Yeah.
I think they had it for like a day and a half. And then somebody like of you know, like whatever their Politburo thing was like, oh, this is bad. We have chosen badly, you know, and then they just immediately
sharing, talking to each other.
Yeah.
No.
They just hit the big like red off button that is sort of like, in you know, I think there's just like a no fun switch that they turn in China. You know, hold on. The people are doing something moderately entertaining. Hold on. And then they just and then it's gone. Because I think the same thing happened with Google. There was that whole debate about Google going into China and that they were there for a while. And I think they withdrew or partially withdrew all of their interest. And it seems like there's a lot of countries. Look, I'm not trying to enable dictatorships. They don't really need my help, I guess. But it just seems like you would just disallow that, like, from jump.
Yeah, that would be, you. Yeah, if I was a dictator.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
And we want Facebook. Well, you can't have it. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like if you're already out there in the street, like, gassing a guy and beating his face in with a baton for doing something, you know, for standing in the wrong part of town and saying the wrong thing, it seems like turning off his internet access really is, you know, that's really a mild response to things. You just do that first. Save yourself the trouble.
Well, they're probably thinking about it now.
Yeah, you wish you'd listen to Rick Emerson now, don't you, Egyptian dictator?
There are two different ways that our brain synchronizes hunger. One is the regular brain that we know about, where we think about what we're eating. And the other is the so-called gut brain, a collection of 500 million nerve cells in our digestive tracts that control muscular contractions, release enzymes, and let us know when we're hungry or full. The second brain is what Nestle researchers are targeting with a new line of foods designed to trick people into feeling fuller faster. The science of satiety is a relatively new field, but it's one that Nestle is developing in cereals and weight loss drinks and advancing through a computerized refrigerator-sized model of the human gut, which allows scientists to watch digestion at work. Scientists hope that by adding chemical compounds to foods, it will make them harder to process and trigger a sense of fullness sooner, fattening company coffers instead of consumers. Companies have been working on satiety-inducing foods for years, but with mixed results. France, a company in France introduced a non-fat weight control yogurt that was pulled off the market in 2007 because, according to a spokesman, it wasn't our best tasting product.
Oh, my God. We are living. First of all, are we in Science on the March?
I didn't really think about doing that as a science thing, but we could. Yeah.
I got to say. OK, we have now officially just entered the realm of the bizarre because we're now living in a Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett novel. So we have entered the book Good Omens. Have you read Good Omens?
Yes.
So isn't Good Omens the book where there's that weird food that they feed the public where it's like you can't really digest it, and so we have all these people who die because they're morbidly obese but they're starving to death.
Wow.
That's got to be in Good Omens.
It sounds familiar. It might be.
Yeah, it's Good Omens where they effectively start feeding the people, the population, just this sort of, it's like a styrofoam basically that has all the in many, many kinds of flavors, and your body retains it and makes you feel full, but it has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. And so people keep eating more and more of it as they start to become malnourished. And so you get these people who are keeling over at the like 500 pounds, and yet their body has absolutely no nutrients in it whatsoever. So,
and this being Nestle, they'll probably start testing this on people in Africa who will be going, great, something to make us feel full, until they just all start, like, you know, keeling over. And then they'll say, you know, well, yes, we were dressed as nurses and doctors when we gave it to you, but really, we just make hot cocoa.
It seems like if you want to test something, all you got to do is just fly over, you know, there or, you know, whatever, you know, Albania. You know, just find the Kurds and just, you know, we were mentioning the Kurds at the top of the show. Just push something out of a plane in a box. You know, I think they're conditioned to eat whatever we drop on them at this point.
I got an email from someone telling me that I need to pronounce John Boehner's name John Boehner because he likes it pronounced John Boehner, and that's how you pronounce someone's name, is however they want you to pronounce it.
Okay.
So from now on, I want you to pronounce my name Dune. Dune.
Okay.
The numlaut.
Gonna put like a numlaut, not like an apostrophe in the middle of it.
Right.
Or like a dot for no reason.
A numlaut over the W.
Okay.
And it will just.
You should put an ampersand in the middle of your name. like between the A and the Y, or between like the or between just get rid of the O.
I'll just be like Kesha and her dollar sign. I'll just replace the W with an ampersand.
Because you could really replace anything with an ampersand, because it doesn't really look like it. It kind of looks like an S, but not really. Sort of looks like an uppercase cursive E. So you could put it almost anywhere.
Mm.
Now I'm just looking at the keyboard trying to find different like diacritical marks I can use.
A North Atlantic right whale will pull through after being freed from 200 feet of rope thanks to the efforts of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration scientists and its state and nonprofit partners. The trapped whale was originally spotted Christmas Day off the coast of Florida. A 150-foot section of rope was removed, but more remained. The whale finally received a belated Christmas gift of freedom on January 15th after calm weather allowed a second mission. In the meantime, the scientists used a satellite tracking tag to follow her. The young female whale was finally freed from the last 50 feet of rope after the scientists used sedatives to calm her down. This is the second time a free swimming whale has been freed after receiving sedation. The first time was in 2009. The 30-foot female whale was born during the 2008-2009 calving season and is a member of a highly endangered species. The whale's habit of swimming slowly close to shore and a tendency to float after death makes the whales easy targets.
I got a great idea for a reality show. You know what they ought to do? Because there's that whole, what is that show, the Bob Barker thing with the whale and the boat and the, you know, there's like the Greenpeace guys. Whale Wars, is that it?
Is that it? Yeah, okay.
Where there's like, those guys are out there trying to like get in the way of harpooning, you know, ships or something. And Barker financed that like $5 million boat with that great, what did he say? And I said, let's get it on. Or whatever that great phrase of his. There ought to be some sort of a Moby Dick reality show. You just get like one Japanese fisherman, you know, and like a really pissed off whale. And it's not like they're hard to find at this point, I would imagine, because they've got ample cause, you know. And then you just, it becomes a whole death match.
You make it like a little bit more even for the whale, like giving it like laser eyes.
Well,
I always want everything to have laser eyes.
No, but I'm saying it seems like if you take the fisherman and you take him off like the $5 billion boat, which is equipped with radar and tracking technology and satellite, and, you know, a gun that fires a metal spear at you, it seems like you are evening things up a little
bit. So you put him in a rowboat with like one handheld harpoon?
Seriously. I mean, it's like guys who go out and hunt and they carry the high-powered rifle. No, that's not hunting. That's waiting. Yeah. That's waiting and pushing a button, basically, and then going, hey, look, the thing just stopped moving hundreds of yards away after I pointed this magical death tube at it. I mean, if you really want to hunt, like, I'll give you, you know, you get your Rainsford on. I'll give you a knife, and we'll send you out there with a camera, friend. Come back and tell me what a sport is then, jackass. So it seems, with the whaling, because it seems like the whales, I mean, I know they're huge and they're fearsome and they're whatever, but it seems like they're still outgunned.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're overmatched. And I don't mean to pick on the Japanese, but I mean, they just pour vast amounts of resources into that industry.
In this particular case, it's okay to pick on the Japanese.
I'm just saying, if it was, you know, if it was the Norwegians that were doing this, I'd be picking on the Norwegians. So the whales are really, you know, their technology, I'd say, is no match for the Japanese whalers in this regard.
So you just want man versus whale, one man, one whale,
or whatever.
Only,
I mean, is
only
that,
one goes home.
Is that fair? I mean, I can't quite figure it out. I don't know. Maybe a guy and like a knife versus a whale isn't quite fair. You're tilting things in the favor of the whale. You got to figure out some. Like, what would you arm a human with that would make him a match for a whale? Like, could it be that it is a guy and one ship or boat that has some sort of technological advancement, but he doesn't have a crew? So in other words, he's got the technology, he's got the boat, but he doesn't have anybody to help him. It's just him and the boat. Because then you're basically putting him in a large vessel that has a lot of abilities, not unlike the whale's body itself. I would watch that show.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Frederick Chopin's habit of drifting off and hallucinating at the piano may have been caused by epilepsy, according to a new study of the 19th century romantic composer. Chopin's tendency to lapse out of consciousness was interpreted by his partner Georges Sand, pseudonym of the French novelist Aurore Dudevant, as the manifestation of a genius full of sentiment and expression. But in the analysis published this week, Spanish doctors say Chopin's hallucinations may have been due to a temporal lobe epilepsy rather than the result of any sweeping artistic tendencies. Manuel Vasquez Caruncho and Francisco Branas Fernandez of the Complexo Hospitalario Zero Alcalde.
That's made up. That's not real.
Complexo Hospitalario.
Those are not real words.
They analyzed descriptions of Chopin's hallucinations from those close to him. They proposed the French-Polish composer suffered from a type of epilepsy that produces conscious hallucinations that last from seconds to minutes. The research was published in the journal Medical Humanities, a specialist publication of the BMJ.
I don't understand. You know, It's not like I'm some creationist or something, or some hippie trippy nutcase that thinks the Earth Mother Gaia is telling you how to paint things. But at the same time, like, what, you know, why do you got to be such a killjoy about it? Why do you got to go stick midichlorians in everything? Why can't the Force just be a thing? You know, it's just a thing that binds the universe together. Why does it have to, you know? Why do you have to go and quantify everything? I'm not talking to you. I'm just saying these guys in this case.
Because we're humans. We want to know why stuff happens. That's why we have science.
I get, but can't they do that on people who are living today? It seems like it's just pointless. It's pointless buzzkillery to go back and you just say, I don't know. Why did he paint these glowing halos around him? He must have had digitalis, you know, or whatever. And it's, you know. Who cares? I mean, like, really, in the grand scheme of things, like, what does it matter?
I don't know.
Let's be honest. Let's just try to figure this out.
Considering of the two of us, I'm the one who is most likely to believe that things might just be magic. It's kind of interesting to hear this coming from you.
No, I'm not. I mean, it's not like I have a problem with it or I'm offended by the idea of knowledge or something. I'm just saying, look at it this way. I mean, are there people living now with ailments they could be studying? You know, people who are actually alive, whose lives or experiences might be bettered if they were, I don't know, treated in some way or had, what are those things called? Doctors or scientists spending time with them? I mean, as opposed to spending time on, like, you know, like the piano natterings of some guy who's been dead for 200 years.
I don't know. I think it's interesting. I mean, I can see the point, though, of letting it be. But I guess if you're somebody who studies such things, then that's going to be what you do. You study brain things, and then one day you read an excerpt from Georges Sand's memoirs, and you go, by Jove, I think that, or whatever the equivalent is in Spanish, I believe that Frederick Chopin might have had epilepsy. I'm gonna figure this out.
Again, it's not like I think the unexamined life is the way to live or whatever. I don't know. It just strikes me as removing a little bit of the fun from things. If you go back and you just have to just be digging up a scientific explanation for everything. I don't know. It strikes me as a little bit of demagification.
Well, I'm not sure if this next story is is related to what you just said or not, but apparently about half of the nation's students are considered proficient in science, and only a tiny fraction show the advanced skills that could lead them to careers in science and technology.
Wait a minute. Now, here's how effed we are as a country, because when you said half the nation's students were proficient in science, I was all like, that's astounding. And
that's
my first reaction was actually to say that that can't possibly be true because it's too high. So you're saying actually that's a bad thing.
No, less than half of the nation's students are proficient at science.
All right.
Only 1% of 4th grade and 12th grade students and 2% of 8th graders scored in the highest group on the 2009 National Assessment of Educational Progress. Our ability to create the next generation of U.S. leaders in science and technology is seriously in danger, said Alan Friedman, former director of the New York Hall of Science. The results also show a stark achievement gap, with only 10% of black students proficient in science in the fourth grade, compared to 46% of white students. At the high school level, results were even more bleak, with 71% of black students scoring below the basic knowledge level and just 4% of them being proficient.
I would be curious to know what they call proficient in science, though. I mean, that's one of the... I'm not saying that this isn't true, or that, like, kids are secretly Mensas and we're just not picking up on it somehow. But I would like to know... Again, I'm not saying this isn't the case. I'm not disbelieving what you're saying. I just wonder how they quantify that. Like, what does it mean to be proficient in science? Like,
well,
you understand what chlorophyll does, or
Depending on things like that. Depending on what level of schooling you're in, the exam tests knowledge and understanding of physical life, Earth, and space sciences. Examples of the skills students need to demonstrate to perform at the advanced level. So this isn't just proficiency, this is the advanced level. But in the fourth grade, designing an investigation to compare types of bird food. In the eighth grade, predicting the sun's position in the sky. And in 12th grade, now keep in mind, again, this is advanced science proficiency. In the 12th grade, recognizing a nuclear fission reaction. But only 34% of 4th graders, 30% of 8th graders, and 21% of 12th graders scored at the proficient level or above. So they don't know science.
This is like that thing where I keep wanting to take the SAT just to sort of see, you know, just to kind of see what I would get and or what my score would be. But then on the other hand, I'm sort of afraid to do it, because if I take the SAT and then I'm just an abysmal failure, then it's like I won't be able to lord what I believe is a superior intellect over the rest of humanity. So I almost don't want to know. Like, I would certainly fail whatever this science proficiency test is. Identifying nuclear fission. Like, either of us could do that.
No. But the U.S. Education Secretary said that the results show students aren't learning at a rate that will maintain the United States' role as an international science leader. Friedman, the expert, said that one unintended side effect of No Child Left Behind, for example, has been less emphasis on science, history, arts, and other subjects in order to emphasize performance in math and reading.
All right. Somebody accuses me of being very angry at science today. Says, why all the anger at science?
Damn science.
And then rather snarkily adds, because I expressed displeasure that they were trying to find. What was it that Chopin had? It was like he would have spells or hallucinations or something. Is that what they were trying to find?
Yeah.
The scientific
epilepsy. Yeah.
And then who's the guy that
he would have hallucinations?
Who's the
waking hallucinations?
Who's the painter that always had the halos around everything?
I don't know.
The thing is, you do though.
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh. Yes. And so, but they're saying now that he had somehow ingested like foxglove or something, like digitalis was the reason for that. And so somebody is asking, you know, don't we exist to understand the reasons for things if you're going to reject looking for a scientific explanation for the way Van Gogh paints or for Chopin's hallucinations, then you are no better than a creationist, blah, 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 blah. Which isn't true. It's just my whole thing is it just seems, first of all, it just seems like a fundamentally flawed and skewed way to investigate anything, since really to find anything out, it seems like you got to do it on a guy who's, you know, alive and able to do something in a laboratory setting. Like, the way they're doing it now, if you're analyzing Chopin, who, again, dead and has been dead for like a couple hundred years, you're never going to get a definitive answer. So the best you're ever going to be able to do is to demystify the thing without any demonstrable gain of knowledge. I think that's my thing. It's like, I'm okay with stripping away like the beauty of mystery or whatever if you're getting hard fact out of it, but they're not. It's just conjecture with no actual upside.
But we, you know, as human beings and as, you know, and we love this stuff. And scientists, of course, love it even more. I mean, and every couple of years you come up with one of these where it's like, we think that Abraham Lincoln had a pituitary disease. You know, let's see if we can figure that out. And now it's we're going to take Hitler's DNA and try to figure out if, you know, he had no sense of smell. I don't know why we care about these things.
But don't you find it frustrating?
Not really.
I do. And I find this sort of thing, and it is exactly what you're talking about. They go, you know, we finally figured out where they kept Hitler's brain. These scrapings from a drawer in the Soviet Kremlin. And it's like, it's never enough evidence to actually demonstrably demonstrate, to prove the thing, though, to show beyond a shadow of a doubt that something is the case. So all it does is it gets you all, like, worked up about, like, oh, maybe they're going to get an answer to, and at the end they go, of course we'll never really know who Jack the Ripper was, but it's fun to speculate. And it's like, if it's a thing that can't ever, like, really, truly, honestly be known, you know, just move on. Move on to stuff that you can figure out at some point. That's my thing. So it does seem like if you are never going to be able to really figure it out, then there's no point in going and removing the cloak of intrigue from it if you're not going to gain something, you know? Because life is a trade-off, but here you're not getting the trade-off. You're just getting the demystifying with no actual gain in knowledge. So suck that, friend.
All right. Okay, well, you'll be happy to know that's all the science.
Okay.
I hate science.
I don't hate you. I just love you in a very specialized kind of way. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. I swear to God, it says there's a Joy of Christmas installment coming up next hour. Really?
Yes, there is.
It is January 25th, right?
I know.
Joy of Christmas. All right.
I'm as shocked as anyone.
All right, so we got Joy of Christmas coming up next hour. Also, Cheney Watch, Taser Watch, Pop Culture Authority, and a Top 5. So we'll get all that. That is coming up next hour. Plus, Mr. Eric D. Snyder of Movie BS with Baron Snyder, which you hear Fridays right here at Cascadia.fm. He's going to be joining us next hour on the Rick Emerson radio program live from the Sundance Film Festival. So if you gnash your teeth and wail and rend your garments, at the end of Legion of News, you are denied the ongoing wit of Don and Rick. You can hear that for just 32 cents a day over at rickemersonshow.com.
Oh, by the way, and he had talked yesterday about how he was going to see a screening of the new movie, The Women.
Yes.
By the same fellas that made the movie Open Water. It's based on the first, I think, in a series. No, I think the third in a series of novels that Jack Ketchum wrote about sort of this cannibal apocalypse kind of thing. And wow, the morning after reviews coming out of Sundance of that movie are amazing. It just sounds just awesome.
Cannibal apocalypse kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I ain't no wordsmith, Rick Emerson.
I'm just saying. Somebody's asking if we can do Joy of Christmas all year round. He says, I know it's possible. We can do it. All right.
Supporters gathered Monday night for a candlelight vigil in Lincoln City to honor Officer Stephen Dodd's service and pray for his recovery. Dodd was shot multiple times late Sunday night during a traffic stop near Lincoln City. He's recovering from emergency surgery. Nearly 200 candles flickered in the misty rain outside the Lincoln City Community Center. The vigil was attended by residents, firefighters, and law enforcement officers and was put together by a local church youth group. Friends and colleagues say Dodds is a fighter and was able to call in his own officer down call. When something like this happens to one of our brothers in the law enforcement community, it really makes an impact because we're all essentially up against the same thing, says Oregon State Trooper Brian Fitch.
You know what the city got to do? The state, federal agencies, whoever, they ought to just get on television every time something like this happens, every time a cop gets shot or there's some horrific crime, you know, committed against anybody in the community. They ought to just get it on television with just a huge, like, barge full of cocaine and then just sink it. And just say, and we're going to do this every time you shoot a cop. Every time you shoot a cop, we are going to destroy a barge full of cocaine. We'll do it live on television, too. Oh, the humanity. And then just have cameras trained on it. Well, you know, like $7 skillion worth of heroin is just sunk to the bottom of the Columbia River. And just go, hey, how do you like them apples? We're going to do it again if you shoot another cop. Have fun.
But of course, the cops already have those drugs, so it's not like they're taking more drugs away from the people who want the drugs.
Don't you think that it would cause a little bit of? Don't you think that would cause some level of anguish in the? It'd be like if you just took a big truck full of kittens and just took them to a pulping plant. Maybe that's the wrong analogy.
That's an unfortunate visual.
Yeah, I don't care about kittens. Okay.
Last month, the Federal Trade Commission proposed the creation of a do not track list, an opt-out feature for web users wanting to avoid targeted online advertising. It didn't insist on legislation, instead calling for web developers to step up to the challenge. Over the weekend, Mozilla and Google did, announcing plans to embed do not track features into future browsers. It's a start, wrote Austin Carr at Fast Company, but opting out is going to face a number of major challenges. Google's feature allows users to permanently save their opt-out setting, but the process is far from streamlined. For Mozilla's tool to work, he wrote, ad tracking companies essentially must opt into the system and agree not to monitor web serving habits of users who have chosen to opt out.
How much Zilla?
Mozilla. So far, the Wall Street Journal reports no companies have agreed to stop tracking users.
Okay. There ought to be a national do not want list. I don't know what it would do, though. I don't know what it would free you from. It seems like there ought to be some list of things that you would not have to be exposed to.
I have such a long list of things that I would put on that.
Wait. No, I don't have anything. Okay. No. Like, maybe it would guarantee that I would never again have to go into a message board and see, like, the bunny with a pancake on his head or something. You know, or just, you know, whatever. Like, whatever it is you don't want to see. Has somebody done a Mozilla no problems kind of jingle?
I don't think so.
Somebody had to do that. Or like a, you know, Mozilla. Woo-hoo!
Let's see the entertainment news, please.
Okay, here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Oscar nominees were announced today, and the British monarchy drama The King's Speech led the pack with 12 nods, followed by the Coen brothers' remake of True Grit with 10, The Social Network, and the sci-fi blockbuster Inception with 8. All of these movies, including Black Swan, The Fighter, and Toy Story 3, were nominated for Best Picture. Oscar-winning actress Monique... And,
How much Neek?
It is like, oh, Monique, too much Neek. It's like an ice pick in the side of my head to have to say the words Oscar-winning actress Monique.
Is this for...
For Precious.
Precious?
Yeah. I hate her so much. She reads the list of nominees and the best actor in
you
a leading
hide it well.
Role category.
I would never
her.
Have known. Okay. I'm sorry. Is it going to cause you a lot of pain if we play this?
No, it'll be fine.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Sorry.
Because if it was going to cause you a lot of pain and suffering, I was going to wait and do it next hour. Okay, fine. You're sure? You're not going to cringe at all when we play Oscar-winning actress.
God, Jesus Christ.
One of the finest artists of her generation. Following in the footsteps of Olivier. And I don't even really have an opinion about Monique. I just like saying stuff that irritates you. All right. Here's Oscar-winning actress.
Monique.
Academy Award winning actress.
Mm-hmm.
An honor bestowed just once a year. Dawn.
Yep.
There have been only 93 actresses in all of Western civilization to have been honored with an Academy Award. One of them? Monique.
Monique, star of Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Javier Bardem in Beautiful. Jeff Bridges in True Grit, Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network, Colin Firth in The King's Speech, and James Franco in 127 Hours.
Which, I realize how far out of the loop I am, because I have yet to see 127 Hours, and I have, so The King's Speech I'm hoping to watch tonight.
It's really good.
Yeah, Dan Hanico at Powell's was like, give me the full court press on that. He was like, you have to see it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that everyone has made such a big deal about Colin Firth for the movie, and I honestly only just saw it this past weekend, finally, and it has not been overhyped.
Really?
It is
justified.
It is very good,
okay.
And he's really good. It is. I mean, you say this about an Academy Award winning movie. I suppose there's some kind of irony to it, or just stupidity. But it is one of the best movies from last year that I saw. It up there with Inception.
Well, because that's not always the case with things that are nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, you know, it's just there's so many variables.
No, some of the movies that are like, you know, The Kids Are All Right was not a terrible movie. Rabbit Hole was good. Winter's Bone has gotten a lot of attention, and I didn't really care for it at all. But The King's Speech is very, very good. Oscar-winning actress Monique, star of Beerfest, reads the list of top 10 films up for the Best Picture of 2010. Of course, we know what those are because I already said. But
Black Swan.
Just to
Mike
hear
Medavoy,
her talk.
Ron Oliver and Scott Franklin, producers. The Fighter, David Hoberman, Todd Lieberman, and Mark Wahlberg, producers.
I'm going to turn up the music so we can hear it more clearly.
And Christopher Nolan, producers. The Kids Are All Right, Gary Gilbert, Jeffrey Lieberhint, and Celine Rattre, producers. The King's Speech, Ian Canning, Emile Sherman, and Garth Ewen, producers. 127 Hours, Christian Coulson, Danny Boyle, and John Smithson, producers.
She done yet?
The Social Network, no. Scott Rudin, Dana Brunetti, Michael DeLuca, and Sion Chafin, producers. Toy Story 3,
I want to loop
Dollar
this.
K. Anderson, producer. True Grit, Scott Rudin, Ethan Coen, and Joel Coen, producers. And Winner's Bone, Ann Rosalini, and Alex Madigan-Yorkin, producers.
I'm going to find some sort of Monique soundbite. I'm going to make it your ringtone when you call me.
The only thing that would have made it okay for Monique to be doing this is if she'd, like, thrown a television at someone. That would have that would have made... Every time I see Monique now, I just want her to throw a TV at somebody.
Hulk smash!
Tom Shurek, president of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, announced the nominees for Best Actress in a Leading Role, if you want to hear that, or we could just save that for...
We'll save that. We'll do it next
hour. Yeah, okay.
All right.
We'll put that aside. Five-time Grammy winner Christina Aguilera will sing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. I've been performing the anthem since I was 7 years old, and I must say the Super Bowl is a dream come true, she said in a statement. The Black Eyed Peas will perform during the halftime.
Oh, boy. I mean, here's the thing about... never mind. I was going to uncork a whole thing about the Black Eyed Peas, but can I just tell you that I was... It was at Scott Daly's house, so we were playing poker on Saturday, where I think he was... I don't know if he was like flipping around on the TV or if he was like on iTunes or something, but it was like he was switching between. So he was putting that weird ethereal Moby album or whatever in the background, where it was just like Moby going for like 40 minutes, and occasionally there's like a whoa.
It was like listening to whale songs or something while we were playing poker. It was very strange.
You were the one who noted it sounded like we should all be getting like spa treatments and cuticle trimmings or something. But at some point, I think he like put on something by like it was like the new Black Eyed Peas or whatever, and it was like Fatboy it was like his veins had just filled with ice water. It was like he just had a sort of a death shiver come over him, and I looked over him, and it's. You could see that thing, which I know you and I both do, where he was. You could see him sort of like clenching, and it was like he was amping up his internal engine for some sort of a rant about the Black Eyed Peas. It was like he was sort of like, it was like when you would crank up your Evel Knievel motorcycle before you hit the release button, and it would go. And then he was just like, "F it," and he didn't do it. Christina Aguilera is interesting in the sense that. Unless I'm missing something, I don't think she's had it. I don't think she's had like a sizable hit in some years. But she is one of those people who yet just remains like sort of an A-lister for some reason. Yeah. I don't dislike her. I don't have a problem with her. But it's like, you know, she didn't really have any hits. And then she put out that burlesque film. And yet somehow she remains like a top shelf celebrity, which is all very strange. Did you hear the single that she put out? I guess it would have been last summer. The I'm Not Myself Tonight single.
No.
It was terrible. It was terrible. It was awful and in such a fantastic way. It was, one of these days I'll tell you all about it. It was really dreadful in just the most delicious fashion.
Bret Michaels underwent a procedure in Phoenix yesterday to close a hole in his heart.
He's going to write a song called that. You know he is.
Hole in my heart.
Yeah.
It was discovered in April when doctors were treating him for a brain hemorrhage.
Wow, bad year for Brett.
If Michaels did not undergo the procedure, he would risk an additional stroke and possible blood clots.
Also, I think all his blood would just fall out of him.
James Cameron told Entertainment Weekly he will release the next two installments of the Avatar movies in Christmas 2014 and 2015. I am in the process of writing the next two Avatar films now, he said. Hooray. We are planning to shoot them together and post them together, and we'll probably release them not quite back-to-back, but about a year apart. Yes, a year apart would be not quite back-to-back.
I find it so difficult, even now...
I know you like the James Cameron.
Well, so do you. You know, it's just, I find it difficult to speak ill of him, but it's like, really? Is this really what you want? Like, you've made the point. Okay, you've made the highest grossing film like in all of history like twice.
Yeah.
Yes, you got everybody to watch 3D movies.
And it looked really, really pretty, and it was cobbled together from plots from your old movies,
well,
and was really not very well written, but it sure looked good.
And also, I get the other thing, you know, because he's a guy that always has a chip on his shoulder, and I say that in the best way. He's got something to prove. I also understand that part of James, whether he has said this or not, I also understand that one of his, just like every rock star eventually writes some horrible concept record because they want people at the Village Voice to write a positive review of them. Guys like James Cameron always eventually want to prove that they can make a family-friendly film that, you know, that everybody can go see. They want to make something that is, you know, that the entire, the entire household, they can go see it and they can all enjoy it. So you did that. Yes, you've made the highest grossing film and family film, like, of all time. The point has been made. I just wish that he would go back to creating, you know. And it's not like I think he lacks the talent. It's not like he's George Lucas.
No, he's made some very terrific movies. I just every time I hear his name, I just do that reflective cringe because he just seems like he's just such an unlikable person.
Yeah, see, and to me, it's all just about the squandered talent at this point. It's like you only get so many years on planet Earth. Are you really going to spend the next 10 of yours making two more Avatar films? Especially because it's not like he really cranks out films at like a really prolific rate now. So it's like if Thomas Harris just said, you know, I'm going to write three more novels. The first one is just going to be Hannibal Lecter, you know, as a Nancy boy in prep school, you know, and then it was just going to be him like flouncing around, you know, in a playpen somewhere. I mean, just because, you know, because he only writes one novel every 12 years. Why not waste another three decades of his life? The end. Thank you for joining us. This has been Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up next hour at rickemersonshow.com today, featuring Cheney Watch, Taser Watch, and The Joy of Christmas, unbelievably. We'll also talk to Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who's at the Sundance Film Festival. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic Provider Minister Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic Tuesday. We will see you again tomorrow, that is Wednesday at noon, for another exciting episode of
Legion of News.
Only on Cascadia.fm.